the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and it's always fun when we get to go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline to welcome another special guest. Jimmy, a longtime friend of the program, joins us now.
That's exactly right. It is Chris Woodruff. He is the Tennessee men's tennis coach, the only player in Tennessee history to win an NCAA singles championship. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. I hope that you and your family, your kids, everybody's safe. Everybody in the Woodruff family?
We're doing great, yes. Everything's going well so far.
Good. What have you been able to do as far as recruiting? We've seen the football team going great guns with all these commitments. What has that meant for you in an effort to try to recruit players for the upcoming class, for next year's class?
We've had some good success, this eligibility where you could get a year back. So, James and I, my associate head coach, we've been doing a lot of good work. So quite pleased with the progress that's been made.
So how many do you have coming back that were allowed to come back? How many are doing that?
We have two players that are coming back. Luca Wiedemann from Germany and Giles Hussey from England. Both those guys have said they wanted to come back. And furthermore, Luke has been around a long time. And Giles, it would have been a shame, really. He played about 14 matches, and that would have been, bad luck for him and bad luck for us had his career been over. But luckily, when he gets another, a mulligan, per se.
So what have you been doing in terms of your players trying to stay in some kind of shape? I don't know if they're playing tennis wherever they're living now, but what have they been doing in that regard, Chris?
Well, they know what to do, and fortunately, a lot of the guys have played for me, and we've worked really hard to create a team culture, and we've been doing Zoom calls about every 10 days. We get on and get the whole squad together, which is quite difficult, as you guys know, having them from all over the world, Australia, trying to sync up with Portugal and, American time. And so we've been doing Zoom calls, and some guys have more flexibility than others. And for a while it was touch and go. And it sounded like over in Europe, it was more strict. I guess the police would come around and knock to make sure that where are they? And if they're not in their house, where are they? So I think things are doing, they're doing a little bit better now.
I was about to ask, Chris, and first of all, it's great to talk with you as always, but when it comes to keeping tabs on players, not just across the country, but around the world, what has that challenge been like, and what has it been like to just watch the news to find out what might be going on in terms of their experience with the virus in their neck of the woods?
Well, for us, like I was saying earlier, the graduate transfer thing where the guys – some of these players from other schools, they go on with, the transfer portal. And I've actually had the benefit of watching a lot of these guys who have hit the portal. So we're not going in there blind when we're trying to get a guy to come here. And as far as some of the other guys, we do a lot of video. I mean, we've been doing this a long time. I've been starting to believe I've been here almost 20 years. And so to watch it on video, you can kind of tell word of mouth, rankings, results, who he's beaten. Ideally, our first choice would be to get out and about, and so that's not going to happen for quite some time.
Well, I was actually talking more about we heard Rick Barnes share his experience and just making sure that his players got home safe and sound. What was it like from your aspect watching the Vols get back to their homes?
Oh, yes, no doubt. I understand what you said. Yeah, they all, when they left, some of them, needed to get out of here pretty quickly. And actually, one of our players' moms, texted and said, "I'm really concerned about my son." She was almost to the point of tears. So we made sure that everybody got back home, and they got back home, and they were able to text me and James and let us know, you know, how they were doing. And so it was actually really a big sigh of relief.
It was a great start to the season as you guys jumped up into the top 10. And I'm just wondering, how tough was it to see the season, see the curtain fall as quickly as it did?
Well, it was bittersweet, really. You get to doing this job and going a million miles an hour. So at first, everybody was devastated. And, you know, we were, like you said, we had just come off a big win. You know, against Ole Miss, who was ranked a couple of spots ahead of us, and snuck that one out. And we were really just getting into the meat of the season. And we were playing on the road in Columbia. And, you know, she called Coach Barnes to find out how they were going to do it. Or are they going to play? Because that was kind of my benchmark. And I knew if Coach told me that, you know, they were going to run their tournament, then it was just a matter of hours that they were going to call and cancel ours. So, and we get back home and still really didn't know that they were going to cancel the season. So we had practice the next day or so and weights as normal. And finally they called it all off and I was exhausted. I felt like I played all 15, 16 weeks of the season. And then again, you went through the boredom phase and, you know, then it went through the wife. I'm not used to having you home this much. And when are you going to start up again? And, you know, we'd like it if you could, the sooner the better. And so now just recruiting is always checking the transfer portal and just, you know, doing things like that and having time to think about what we want to do if and when we start.
Our guest, Chris Woodruff, Tennessee head men's tennis coach. Chris, do you have any idea when some of your players might return to campus? I know that they're allowing some football players. Well, what about your athletes?
You know, I'm not really sure. One of the things that I've tried to do is we've got a great, you know, great person that I work for, and she's been really good at kind of just informing me of what we're doing and what needs to happen. We had a call today, and it sounds like the league are getting out and about on the road recruiting. May not happen, I heard at least on the call, July 31st for us. So that's a long time. So I really don't know what's going to happen, and just try to go one day at a time and continue to do these Zoom calls. And I've just told the guys that you need to be ready because they could call one day and say, let's try to get them back over here and, you know, start hitting some balls. So just try to stay on the toes as best we can.
We haven't had any pro tournaments in quite a while. And I wanted to get your perspective on this. You played on the Pro Tour for many years. Would you be leery of traveling to England or France or Australia or, heck, even to New York to play in a tennis tournament?
Personally, I would. I guess I'd also be leery if my ranking wasn't where it needed to be in order to get into to get into all the tournaments. Because if I'm a little bit removed from it, but I've been following, as you guys know, I follow sports a lot. And the ATP Tennis Tour is really the only tour, you know, NASCAR started. I just read where hockey's going to give it a go. I read an article about NBA may start games at, you know, the complex in Disneyland. And then you have the ATP Tour. I haven't heard anything. You know, and I have guys who played here who are out and about kind of, you know, not really knowing what to do. And then you factor in that half the stretch after the U.S. Open would be over, it goes to Asia. It's just so global, but I haven't heard anything from the tour about what their, you know, little template might look like or when they might start up.
I looked at the schedule, and it says the first men's tournament is going to be August 3rd through the 9th, the City Open in Washington. That's the first one I see on the schedule. That's a long time away, being away, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is. And then, you know, what do you do after that? And if that doesn't run, I mean, you can only, with tennis, the year ends October. And really, if you can't for the next batch, then you're probably looking at not starting up until the first of next year. And that's, you know, who knows if that's going to happen.
Yeah, that is a great question. Do you think the challenge is greater for the world of tennis as opposed to golf? Now, granted, both have players from all around the world, but it does seem perhaps that tennis might see more nations represented than golf. It could be close, but do you think that's any more of a challenge, as well as how much of the activity takes place around the world as opposed to a lot of international players coming to the United States to play golf?
I think you're exactly right, Tom. There's no question that, at least looking from my perspective, that tennis is played, you know, every continent except Antarctica, right? And a lot of it. Like, if you were to look at the ATP Tour schedule, there are tournaments all over the world. So how, being so global, and it's kind of all played under one tour, right, is the ATP Tour, whereas about, if I'm quick with golf, you have three or four, you know, different tours that seem to be run really well, like the PGA Tour, you have the Korn Ferry Tour, you have the Australasia Tour, the European Tour, and it's all kind of, you know, run, I believe, as its own little deal. And then you have the ATP Tour that's run, and they run the Challengers, they kind of tied into the Futures. And so, yes, I think you're exactly right. I have no idea how they're going to work it all out, being so global.
We got in, now this is off the cuff, we got into a discussion of greatest sports rivalry since we just saw the match with Mickelson and Brady against Woods and Manning, and it was a best individual sports rivalry. And when it comes to the world of tennis, would you put Nadal and Federer ahead of Borg and McEnroe, or vice versa? What would you say would be the greatest tennis rivalry of all time? And could you put top three together without including Navratilova and Chris Everett from the women's side?
And that's a really good question. I guess from just a pure, like, cat and mouse type battle, and really transcending the sport. And the mystique behind the two, you'd have to go with Borg and McEnroe, in my opinion. But all those guys, you had Connors and McEnroe, they were both feisty. But for me, in terms of what they did for the sport, getting it going, Borg and McEnroe, right? One was just so stoic, the other was kind of brash, one from a small town, the other one, you know, New York City. It was just, to me, that was it. And whenever they played, and if you look at when they played, I think most people could remember or know about that Wimbledon final when that tiebreaker went on and on and on. And I actually saw that. It was on TV the other day. I was watching Sports Network, and all of a sudden you just roll across and you see, you know, those guys playing. And for me, that does it. And you're right about Navratilova and Everett, although I'm not quite as familiar with the women's side of the game as I am in the men. I thought you were getting ready to ask me who the greatest, like, individual rivalry was, and I was going to say Pablo Holmes or Hagrid Lynn or something like that, but I'll go Borg and McEnroe.
Great answer.
Yeah.
But how much did you enjoy watching that when it comes to the match? Because I know, as you just said, you keep up to date with sports across the board.
Yes, I find myself, first of all, for those who don't know, the grass has changed. You know, now it's like playing on asphalt. You bounce the ball, it's literally like a hard court. It's slow, as you can tell, all the court was chewed up, you know, up by the net. So the playing styles were different. But I have no doubt in my mind that if you gave Borg the technology that we have today, and you gave McEnroe the technology that we have today, then both those guys would have been just as good today as they were back then, because they were world class in any era.
Our guest, Chris Woodruff, Tennessee men's tennis coach. Chris, how disappointed were you to see them cancel Wimbledon?
Well, I guess from a health standpoint, a safety standpoint, it was obviously the right thing to do. And, you know, I couldn't believe, if I read it, this is maybe the second time ever that they have had to cancel Wimbledon. You guys might be able to speak to that better than me, but I believe I read it's only been canceled one other time. And it's really sad. It's like the Masters for us. It's a huge goal, you know, huge sporting event. And, you know, the Masters are going to go on and play in November. And for us, it, with so many, you know, having that one tour, it's hard to get that event in there. So it was the biggest tournament that we play in, most prestigious. And so obviously, big disappointment, because I do enjoy watching it.
What did you think of the French Tennis Federation having a support fund of about $10 million to help with players who are ranked outside of the top 100?
That was surprising. I had no idea that they you know, had that kind of money. I mean, I know the U.S. team has a lot of money, but to have that fund is obviously great. I had no idea the amount of money that you were talking about.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sum to help them out. But just the idea of doing that, that seems – I would have thought maybe the French Federation would have teamed with the USTA perhaps and jointly done that as opposed to just the French Federation doing it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think also that's the same federation just arbitrarily decided to go off and say we're going to play the French Open at this date. I remember reading – you know, something recently where they just went ahead and nobody knew about it, right? And
right.
They just arbitrarily announced, hey, we're playing the tournament on this date, and everybody was like, wow, you know, the U.S. Open, you know, when they announced their date, I read the article, like, after further consulting with the players and everybody involved, you could tell they were taking a jab at, you know, the French Federation for, you know, coming out and doing that.
The Knoxville Challenger, there was a recent meeting. Indications are they're going forward with that. The USTA has not told them no. It's going to be set for the early in November. How big do you think that would be for the University of Tennessee to be able to host that Challenger, which has been such a successful event in Knoxville?
Well, obviously, it'd be great. You know, my concern is this. I think the fans really make the Challenger here. You know, they come out and support the event. So you can imagine the disappointment that Helen Ross McNabb Center would probably feel if they say, yes, we're going to run the Challenger, but you can't have any fans come in the building. Because I don't really know their inner workings of that. I'm sure you do have a say in it because they're going to have safety issues and protocol that they're going to have to follow. The tour is going to come in and they're going to have protocol. Like, I can't imagine everybody using the locker room. I can't imagine everybody stretching and using the weight room there. I just don't know, you know, how in the world that would work. But I think it'd be an incredible disappointment. Great to have the tournament thing, get the fans. It'd be tough if the fans, because the fans really make the event.
Yeah, they do. And they would have to try to have some type of distancing, I think, and limit the amount of attendance if they do. And they've got so many tremendous sponsors that would be hard. But I agree with you. I think the fans make it. I don't know that there's a challenger in the country that draws fans like they do for the challenger here.
The passion. I know a few of the people who've made this thing run, and I just know that it starts, you know, the minute the challenger ends, they're already on the ball trying to get it, you know, up and running. And what can they do better and facilitate and growth and try to make it better for the next year, no doubt.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, always great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll get some pro tennis going here pretty soon, and hopefully with your program, look forward to you getting going and checking to see out how you might do this upcoming season. But thank you for taking the time to be on the show with us.
Okay, guys, always great to catch up. You guys stay safe. Thanks for having me.
All right, you too.
You too, Chris. Thank you very much.
Chris Woodruff, Tennessee men's tennis coach, his thoughts on his program, where it is, and also with pro tennis as well.
Yeah, and it's very appropriate to have him join us today. Yesterday, a special day in the history of Tennessee tennis, May 26, 1980, Mel Purcell and Rodney Harmon captured Tennessee's first NCAA title in tennis, winning the doubles trophy. Same date, 2014, Michaelis Levitas and Hunter Reese won their second NCAA doubles title for the University of Tennessee. So May 26th, a big date, and as you pointed out, Chris Woodruff, the only Tennessee Vol to come away with the NCAA singles championship.
That's a good note about doubles. I didn't realize that. Yeah, interesting.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with more. To join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
We work all day under a neon Budweiser sign. Yeah, it's a really cool thing. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, we are Sports Radio, WNML.
with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Sports Talk continues. Why don't we take a quick trip across the hallway to our sister station, News Talk 98.7, as we're joined by Alex Abernathy. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Doing fine, thank you. What's the good word today?
Well, first off, I'll start with a bad word. I had to rush over here after the space shuttle launch got canceled today, so we're all over at the news side a little bit heartbroken as Sam Forman gives me the heartbreak hand sign through the window right now. But that's not coronavirus related. This is a couple quick notes to start. Number one, Bill Lee, just a couple weeks ago, came out saying that he had allowed some legislation to go through that was giving law enforcement agencies lists of people as well as their addresses that had tested positive for the coronavirus. Now, this drew up a lot of criticism from really both sides of the aisle, people saying that this was a violation of privacy and all sorts of complaints along that Fourth Amendment line. And Governor Bill Lee announced today that he will be repealing that, and the practice will end on May 31st. So there will be no more privacy concerns there in terms of your health and COVID-19. Also, Halloran Hilton Hill had some state senators on the show yesterday and today talking about budget and whatnot from all the tax dollars lost during COVID-19. There's an estimated $700 million tax dollars that have been lost in the state, and that's just based on sales tax alone. So the conversation really revolved around how are we going to recover from this? And I think a lot of people will be happy to hear that most senators are pushing for no tax increases across the state. So we shouldn't see new taxes as we try to recover from the coronavirus economic downfall. Also, the senators were saying that teachers and law enforcement should not expect to be laid off as of right now. They're trying to prevent that as well. So we do look like we're going to be able to recover without paying a high price from the coronavirus pandemic. I'll run through the new numbers real quick. Knox County Health Department gave out the numbers today. We have 366 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the county. That is up 14 cases. Now, that means we've had three straight days of double-digit increase in cases, which a lot of people drew some concern from. But Martha Buchanan, she's the director of the Knox County Health Department. Just like she's done over the last few days, she eased the tensions about this, said we expected this, we're prepared for it, and overall, Knox County is still in very good shape going forward. Guys, our COVID-19 coverage is brought to you by Advanced Heat, AC, and Plumbing. As always, your family's comfort is their family's business.
Alex, always appreciate it. And of course, for more information, folks can stay up to date with the with every social media platform, as well as the easy and user-friendly newstalk987.com, correct?
Yes, sir. We've got all the numbers broken down for you on there, county-by-county breakdown, more in-depth with the local numbers, whatever you want. We have it right there, newstalk987.com.
Well, here's hoping that they get the launch ready for Saturday, because I guess that's when they'll try again, right?
I believe so, and I'll be glued to the TV for it.
That makes two of us. Alex, have a great night. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Thank you. That's Alex Abernathy with our sister station, News Talk 98.7. We'll get a break and be back with more. To join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Sports Talk rolls on. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
John, Mac McClung from Georgetown has decided to transfer to Texas Tech. Texas Tech's had a really nice run here with their basketball program. So McClung, who's from Gate City, Virginia, has selected to go to Lubbock, Texas. Tennessee had not really, I don't think, shown a great deal of interest, even though they're nearby, to his home city, because I think Tennessee's looking down the road at some players that they want to bring into the program, like Kennedy Chandler and some others. So, and I was kind of hoping, selfishly, he would end up at Wake Forest to kind of help out Steve Forbes. But a really good player, Mac McClung, headed to Texas Tech as a transfer. Also, Vince McMahon, said that he has no interest in buying back the XFL. They declared for bankruptcy, but they have had a number of bidders, I think over 25, showing an interest in the league for the 2021 season and beyond. What do you think about the XFL getting back on its feet?
Well, it really is something to see. And, again, still a little surprised that when you consider how much money the WWE has made over the years, that they pulled the plug and called the end of the XFL as quickly as they did through all this. And you were right. There was a lot of speculation that Vince McMahon, having declared bankruptcy and put the league up for sale, that maybe was going to kind of come back through the back door and get a much cheaper rate and dodge having to pay creditors with the filing for bankruptcy. He said that was a baseless accusation. There was nothing to it. And he promised not to buy back the league. You've got 20 individuals and or organizations that have completed the paperwork that is saying that they are officially interested, and you have at least six more that are in the process of completing their paperwork. So there is a lot of interest. What I also think is interesting is Jason LaCanfora, who writes for CBS Sports. He thinks that the organization that should buy the XFL, jumping out in front of anybody, out of everybody else, is the NFL. It's his, he supposes that the NFL could go a long way to adding to its depth and, a flash word these days, diversity, by bringing in the XFL under its umbrella and being able to develop not only players, but also coaches. And when you look at administrators, executives, all kinds of things, when you consider all the conversation that recently took place about the NFL trying to put a little greater depth and detail and perhaps furthering the cause of minority hiring, that this might be, I don't think it's a crazy plan. I just don't know if the NFL would be in a mood to do it. But you could do it simply for the fact that, just think, I was watching a special the other just yesterday about Jim Rice, and when he got the call to that he was on his way to the Hall of Fame, that he spent, you know, X amount of time in these minor league stops, and he played one season of winter ball, whether it be Venezuela or in Puerto Rico or a location like that. But you would have spring football. You would have the chance for player development. You would have the chance. I think that there would be perhaps. I think it would be worth the NFL's while to be able to control what was done in the spring, as opposed to, I wouldn't call it a competing league, but different sensibilities and or perhaps goals and mindset. We saw that there was a quarterback that had signed with the XFL that was prevented from getting an opportunity to play for an NFL team during the 2019 season, and I don't think that would happen. I think that if the NFL was the parent company for the XFL, they would be able to have agreements like that. There would be the opportunity. It would be the mega taxi squad, so to speak. And I think there's a little merit to the consideration as to what you could do with, essentially, it would be a spring version of winter ball for baseball, but for football. That would be younger players would have the opportunity to develop. You could do a little bit more with direct ties. And I don't know if you would do it perhaps on a divisional basis, or exactly if there would be teams that controlled the rights of players that played in the XFL. Any of these things would be something you could examine. But I don't know. I think it would make as much sense as somebody else trying to put that league together and kind of survive on its own.
Could the XFL be to the NFL what the G League is to the NBA?
I think it could. I do. I just think that they would be able to, one, you know that you wouldn't have to worry about it going away. Also, just think of what you're providing for. I mean, it may not be your primary television partners, but that's a lot of inventory for what could be secondary and other partnerships. When you look at what they do, whether it be YouTube or different things like that, I just think that you could have other broadcast partners that would love the opportunity to show NFL, quote-unquote, caliber football in the spring, knowing that people would have the opportunity to better themselves and give themselves a shot at making the team or the depth chart when it comes to the next go-around of organized team activities and even July camps.
Do you think if the NFL had that ownership that it would give the XFL the credibility to sustain itself, but not only that, but to draw more viewers?
I think so. I think it would, because it's been viewed as competition, and that's how it started, because it was going to be the XFL. And, of course, it folded like a cheap tent, and even more so this go-around. It didn't even play as many games as the league where Steve Spurrier was champion. the AAF. But I just think that that's something the NFL, if the NFL isn't already considering doing this, it should. I'll just say it that way.
Yeah, I think that would be intriguing if they went that direction. They could also, the NFL could use the XFL to experiment further on using instant replay for pass interference calls.
And, 100%.
And onside kicks.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they did in NFL Europe.
Yes.
Because remember our friend Eddie Powers told us that, hey, in overtime in NFL Europe, guess who was guaranteed a possession? Both teams in overtime.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there are a lot of possibilities. The more I discuss this with you, the more I like it.
Yeah. Now, whether or not the NFL, again, is looking for that kind of capital outlay remains to be seen. But I think that they could manage it, and there could be a stamp of approval on that league that, again, you look at what it would mean for executive training, for administrative training, for coaching, and just, again, depth and diversity. I think it would be a potentially huge plus for the NFL.
And you wouldn't have to pay Oliver Luck $5 million a year or whatever he was making.
Correct.
So, yeah, you don't need somebody making that kind of money to run the league. So I think it's got a lot of possibilities. And I think with the NFL direction and leadership, that could be a win-win for both the NFL and for the XFL.
And it would be another draft that that Roger Goodell could hold from his family room.
That's right. Yeah. And sometimes M&M's stand,
anyone?
Sometimes sit, sometimes lie down.
That's right.
So, yeah, I like it. I think that's the best way for the XFL to survive. I really do.
I think so as well.
Yeah. So.
But we'll get a break and be back to close out hour number two of Sports Talk. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. That's how you join Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Not so much our job as it is our obsession. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Six five six 9900 is how you join us. 656-9900 puts you on Sports Talk. 1-800-656-9900 is how you can call toll free, and star 990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. cellular phones. And we've got a lot more coming your way. Can't wait to catch up with our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle to get his thoughts, as so much going on around the league. And we also look forward to the opportunity to cross paths with Tom Hart, ESPN and SEC Network announcer extraordinaire, as he'll join us after our trivia challenge tonight with the Sports Fix at 6. But again, to join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900. And it's interesting, as we have talked a lot about the match that we saw on Sunday and 5.8 million viewers, Jimmy. Phil Mickelson, that was the third time he's been a part of it. First was just him and Tiger. This time, Phil and Tom Brady, Tiger and Peyton Manning. And he wants to see this, Phil Mickelson, be an annual event.
You know, I wouldn't mind seeing it, and I would not mind seeing, I get what he's talking about, Steph Curry and Michael Jordan. Those are certainly two big names. I actually think Curry's a better golfer than Jordan.
Much better.
Yeah, I think you would see two good players. I think there would be a lot of interest in it. Given the circumstances, I don't think there's any way in the world you'd have 5.8 million people watching it, but I think it would be entertaining. I don't know that well, maybe you would have as much trash talking. Jordan certainly likes to trash talk. Curry does too. I would be – I don't know about annual, but I would watch a third version of it, and then I guess it would depend on who you had as the matchups. But there's a part of me that thinks you could sustain this for next year, maybe another year or two, and then after that I think it would lose some of its appeal, maybe some of its novelty, unless you were able to get some very, very compelling non-golfers, non-pro golfers involved.
Yeah, you couldn't do it with just anybody, and you do have – see, I think what would be lacking perhaps in that matchup, while you do have the big names and the outstanding individual athletes and performers that Steph Curry and Michael Jordan are and have been, you just don't have the compelling rivalry between the two that was there for Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Right. That you took a great rivalry in golf, and you coupled that with a great rivalry from the National Football League, and Curry and Jordan didn't play one another. So I do think that there's an aspect of it that would be compelling. Now, if Isaiah Thomas was a golfer or Bill Laimbeer, that's who you pair with the other. Now, granted, I don't know that either Woods or Mickelson would want to have to spend 18 holes with Bill Laimbeer as their partner. we'll just say this. I do think that he wasn't quite the ogre that he was on the court in the NBA when he was a coach in the WNBA. So I think that it might be a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing. But boy, that would be tough, and we know there would be zero love lost if it were Isaiah Thomas. I just don't know if he plays much golf at all.
I don't either. You know, Laimbeer at one time was a 2-handicap. He was a really good player.
Really?
I don't know where he is now, but he was a tremendous player at one point.
Yeah, not surprising.
He's like 6'10" or something.
Yeah, and he was actually a nice guy when he was drafted in the NBA with Cleveland, and then somehow went to the dark side when he went to Detroit, because my goodness, that was one of the things that really stood out to me about The Last Dance, is just how much I hated that group of Pistons. I mean, it came right back, and that was the thing that I shared most in terms of my feelings with what Michael Jordan was portraying. And that was, hey, we could agree to hate the Pistons day in, day out for the rest of time with again, just the boorish and thuggish behavior where you were going to take a pounding. And what's interesting is we saw what Michael Jordan had to do, because he wasn't the incredible cut out of granite person that he was when he won the 6 championships. He had to get there in order to survive the challenge presented by the physical and incredible play of the Detroit Pistons. So if the Pistons had not been in their position that they were as the reigning world champions, and then it was Jordan and the Bulls who knocked them from their spot on top of the mountain, I just wonder, do the Bulls get the job done if Jordan doesn't take the incredible physical growth and put together that effort that he did, just from mindset to being more durable, physical? Yeah. I just wonder if they can win 6 and 8 if he doesn't go through that incredible and reshaping of his own stature.
I'm going to say probably not, because not only was he more physical, I think he was more durable to last throughout a season with that. The other part of that is I don't mind physical basketball, but I do mind assault.
Yeah.
And I think what the Pistons did in many occasions were they just assaulted people. You come in the lane, and we're going to knock the hell out of you, try to decapitate you. That's not basketball. That is not basketball to me. So I didn't like it. I know some people like that physical style. And, again, there's a difference in being physical and a difference in just blatant assault. And I didn't like what the Pistons did. I do remember Michael Jordan came here to play in a golfing exhibition at Holston Hills somewhere in the 90s. I don't remember the exact year. And I remember interviewing him with a group of people, and I asked him about Joe Dumars, and he said he was the only sane player on that Pistons team. And he was probably right. They had some others that might have been somewhat sane, but not many of them. maybe he was the only sane one that was a big contributor. But I didn't like the brand because I just thought they mugged people, and I didn't think that was basketball. That's not the way I liked it, appreciated it, grew up, and enjoyed it. And so, but yeah, they got away with it to a certain extent, I guess. Like they won two NBA titles doing that.
Yeah.
But I thought they went over the line with that, and I actually prefer the basketball that we see today than what we saw then when they were just trying to beat up everybody. And look, you're asking to injure people too when you do that, when you knock them to the floor and that kind of stuff. That I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, just to see some of that footage again and realize that there were no fouls called on some of those plays, it was beyond me. And now we did see that essentially from that Jordan's incredible run of success with Chicago, that might have been where you had the it meant something different when it was first out there, and that was the Jordan rules. I think that might have been exactly what led to perhaps the style of play that we see now, that once you get to a certain level in terms of accomplishment, you can count on a number of whistles being in your back pocket. And so I do think that there was an impact of the game that grew from what Jordan did, and it was just one. It was a result of how incredible he was as a player. Not that he needed any kind of protection and or favorable treatment. I just think that when we went from perhaps the team-oriented success to needing an individual, a star to lead the way, maybe that is exactly where we got to the point where you know that a specific player is likely never to foul out of the game, and then also just kind of seeing the lay of the land as it still kind of gets executed today.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing about today is I hear they talk about the players sometimes are too nice to each other. I think you can have a healthy, spirited rivalry and still be nice to your opponent.
Yeah.
I don't think they play a game and then they're like, I kind of like this other guy. I'm not going to try as hard. No, I think sometimes when you're friends with somebody, you want to beat them even worse. You just don't beat the heck out of them like the Pistons did in an effort to do that. So you can still be ultra-competitive and like the guy you're going against. I mean, I like my brothers, but when I played basketball or ping-pong against them, I tried to beat them. So, yeah, I don't see any reason you can't have both. It's not exclusive. So, but I much prefer the style of play now than I did that bruising, beat-the-heck-out-of-you style the Pistons play.
Yeah, and there have been some interesting side stories that have come out of the airing of the Last Dance, and you've talked about some of the reaction where perhaps some half-truths or untruths, some flat-out lies were found to be the case. You also had reaction from guys like Horace Grant. Did hear, as the Pistons snubbed the Bulls the way the Celtics snubbed the Pistons, that John Sally actually asked to go back in the game. He was on the bench near the end of the game when it was obvious the Bulls were going to eliminate Detroit. He asked to go back in the game simply for the fact that he didn't want to be part of the crew that simply headed to the locker room. He wanted to congratulate the Bulls on their victory. And to me, that's one of the things I do remember liking John Sally as him and Joe Dumars might have been the only sane ones in the Motor City. But I thought that was a pretty interesting reaction to hear that he actually asked back into that game so he would not be a part of the crew that just left with time still on the clock.
Not only did that catch my attention, I thought it was pretty smart and pretty classy of him. I don't want a part of it. I'll go back in the game. Yeah, I like that from John Sally.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. When we return, our friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. He'll join us for the first half of hour number 3 of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.